Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. I'm Eric Olson. It is time once again for America's Most Haunted Radio. Hope you're all having an exceptional evening. We have another great show. Very excited about it. We have Ed and Marcia Edmonds of Travel Channel's Making Monsters returning to the show. We had them on one of our early episodes about a year ago. I think it was September. And had a great time, had a great chat, and looking forward to that. I'm seeing some sort of little announcement here, a message from Blog Talk Radio saying there's some sort of delay in processing files. I'm not sure if that applies to us or not. I'm not sure. Well, we will continue apace, and I'm sure things will get resolved. For those of you who don't know, Ed and Marcia Edmonds are the stars of Travel Channel's Making Monsters. Now in its third season, and it's a great show. I love it. You know, there's a lot of these kind of behind the scenes, how things are done, how things are made, watching industries. When I watch this one, it kind of reminds me, just in terms of process, like the aquarium show on Animal Planet. But of course, it's an entirely different ethos. And these guys are making all kinds of cool masks, props, animatronics for the haunt industry at their Distortions Unlimited, the Colorado-based haunt industry animatronic prop-making company that they own and run. And Ed goes all the way back, I guess, to the 70s. He is a legend in the industry. And if you watched the last couple of episodes, you saw the sculptor Jordu, who sort of worships Ed's early work making masks way back in the 80s. And these original masks that Ed made are real collector's items. It's really great. Anyway, on the show, we get to see how all these things are made, and then they go and they install them at the various haunted houses throughout the world, mostly the U.S., but recently they just went to Israel, the first haunted attraction in Israel. That was really interesting. They installed a huge rattlesnake. And, you know, there's always issues, because anytime you're dealing with machines that move and interact, things just simply always go wrong. So it's really fun to see the drama, of course, of how this gets worked out. And it does always get worked out. Teresa, are you with us now this evening?
I am here. Ready to
Excellent.
Go.
Excellent.
I can't wait.
How are you?
I'm good. I didn't get to talk to these folks last year when we interviewed them.
I think you were out of town or something. I was remembering that as well. So this will be a first for you. And I believe we are now welcoming Ed and Marcia Edmonds. Is that you, Ed and Marcia?
You are correct, sir.
Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
We're great.
I was just watching about the last...
Welcome to the show. I didn't get to speak with you last year. I apologize. I was off on some haunted adventure of some sort. So I'm really excited that you guys came back on the show and that I finally get to talk to you.
Awesome. So are we.
This is Teresa, by the way, the world famous haunted housewife.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Marcia.
Haunted housewife. I like that.
Yeah, it's catchy and it's fitting. So
it actually is fitting. She is a housewife, and by golly, she's haunted.
That's great.
Haunted. Spooky.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're going to get to that. We'll hold off. But I remember when last we spoke, and I was just looking it up, it was September of a year ago, toward the end of the show, I kind of caught you guys off guard and asked if you had had any haunted experiences. And that turned into a very interesting conversation. So we will certainly get into that. But for now, let's talk about the show, which is just great. Again, it just seems to keep getting better. I really, really love, for some reason, your show, the flow of it, just feels more organic and real than a lot of the other, maybe almost any of the other kind of, you know, industrial process shows, of which there are so many, whether they're gold mining or building aquariums or, you know, any number of other processes, all of which are interesting in their own right. And of course, your process is fascinating because it's so varied and because of the subject matter. But as a show, for me, it just seems to work better. It seems less forced. When there's drama, it's like, wow, that's real drama. Something's not working. I love Practical Joke that that Jordu played on Ed with the long-lost mask. We can get into that. But, you know, even though obviously that was a, you know, sort of manufactured thing, it really just seemed like something that he would do to you.
Well, you know, here's our trade secret for the show, and that is when they first approached us about this whole thing, we said, look, guys, we're not actors, and we if we tried to fake it, it would come off really bad, and we don't want to cuss, we don't want to swear, we don't want to fight, you know, and it was like, they're like, and this is Warm Springs when they first approached us. They're like, no, 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 we don't want that. What we want to do is just open the door to the world, to your industry, and let people look in. And so the stuff is as real as it can be. Now keep in mind, I mean, they have huge cameras they have to lug around. They have to set up lights. And we there's times like I need to just talk to Mike, and I have to wait for 10 minutes for him to get stuff set up. But they won't let me in his room because they want it to be as authentic as possible, and we talk about the things we'd really talk about. And for instance, the thing you brought up with Jordu, that was totally Jordu's idea. He said to Lisa, the executive producer, Lisa Tanzer, he's like, well, I want to do this Practical Joke and this thing to Ed, and I think it might be worth filming. And he described it, and she said, absolutely. So it was about as organic as it gets.
And it was funny. And you, the look on your face, I mean, you were flummoxed. It took you a while to really process that when all the masks showed up at the show, at the Mask Fest, aptly named, and all of a sudden all these masks that you thought that you had created and somehow misplaced in your brain, lo, those many years ago.
I was totally convinced. In fact, it was great to see that on film, because in my mind, my first thought was Jordu is going to be super mad because he thought he bought a rare collectible piece for $2,000, and now, you know, apparently I'd made a bunch of them, and so then at the end he's staring at me, and who would do such a thing, and I'm thinking, he's going to be mad at me, and that's why I put my hands up. Hey, I had nothing to do with this, and I didn't want to say it, but I figured the show producers put everybody up to this, put the word out, bring your masks, and so forth. And so I'm like, well, I can't say that, but it's like, dude, I didn't do it. And so he had to repeat it, and the synapses were barely firing, because for, I don't know, months, he had set me up to believe that I had made this thing and forgot it.
It was amazing, and I'm sure you will get back at him. Is that something we're going to see this season, you getting back at him?
If the show gets renewed, he's in for it, and I have repaid jokes back manyfold, in fact, one, I don't want to go in the whole thing what they did, but basically I went to get him back. I tricked them into thinking I threw my guts up in the sink and went into convulsions, and they went white, and they were, you know, trying to call 911, and they were and Glenn, my friend, was trying to figure out how to, you know, keep my tongue out of my mouth so I wouldn't swallow my tongue. And so, you know, they had their fun, but then they got it back.
Oh, I imagine that. They had nightmares, I'm guessing. Teresa, who did not have the pleasure of speaking with you guys last time around, Why don't you, let's get right into it there, dear.
All right, well,
all right,
to,
I'm ready for you. What do you got?
You have to excuse me if I repeat some of the questions we asked you before, because, again, I wasn't on the interview, and I'm ultimately fascinated with everything that you do, especially since I can't do any of it. I can't draw. I can't sculpt. I don't have that creative artistic bone in me, and it's I'm really impressed by people who can do this. And there seems to be a rash of shows right now, reality shows with the makeup and the effects and things like that. And it's fascinating. It's not even something that I'm normally that I was into. I don't dress up. I don't do cosplay kind of things. But it's so fascinating just to see the creativity of what you do and how you do it and where you get your ideas. And so give me a little bit of background with you and Marcia of how you started. What started you in this specific field? Obviously, you must have an artistic background. But what got you started into the, we're going to make scary monster creature masks and stuff? How did you get into this specific field?
Oh, I wish I had a better story. But, you know, I was a dumb teenager, and I had my dentist help me make a cast of my face because I'd heard that you could make a cast of your face with dental alginate. So he was like, yeah, sure. So I went into his office late one night. We made this face cast. And so I was making, like, monkey faces and things like this. And so one day he has his brother over at his house, and our dentist was actually our next-door neighbor. And so he says, come on over here and bring some of your stuff. And so I bring the stuff. And it so happens his brother was head of the art department down at the college in Pueblo, Colorado. And he looked at the stuff, and he offered me a scholarship to make monsters for art credit. And I turned him down. That's how smart I was. And the reason was I didn't think I could make a living doing something like that, you know, something fun. And so But I did want to be in art, so I studied to be an art teacher, came up to Greeley to go to UNC here, and was continuing to mess with masks and was painting them for a local novelty store called Party Palace. And I went to a costume contest and lost to a mask I had painted. And I thought, well, I'm just going to make a mask from scratch that, you know, I can win these contests the following year. And so I started, made the mask, and this guy at the novelty store, the Party Palace, saw it, and he's like, well, could you make more? And we could try selling them. And that's how it started. So it was almost like destiny. It was like I was supposed to do this. I wasn't smart enough to know it, and so I just had to get it thrust into me, and it just took off from there.
Now, is this something that you learned in school? Is this something that they teach in art class? Or is this something that you figured out how to do yourself? Because I wouldn't know the first thing. Well, maybe I know the first thing now from watching shows, but I wouldn't even know how you begin to make that kind of a mask. Did somebody teach you this, or did you figure this out on your own?
Well, unfortunately, back then, and this is late 70s, it was a black box. I mean, everybody. It was a very tight-lipped thing. You couldn't get people to tell you things. You know, I had talked with people like Don Post with Don Post Studios, who was also a mask maker and very tight-lipped. And so all I had was Richard Corson's stage makeup, and they showed you how to sculpt. You know, like if you wanted to make a nose or something like this, and how to make a latex piece. And I just expanded that, turned it into making full head masks. But I can tell you that, like just the paint, figuring out how to paint a mask that so the paint wouldn't crack off because rubber stretches, I probably tried 100 different types of paint until we finally got a secretary at a latex company to slip up and say how you do it. And so it was a long process learning how to do it. Now it's like you go on the internet, you can get any answer to any question. It's amazing. So it's a much better time to start making monsters.
And these people even have this TV show where they show you how to do it.
Well, that's right. And now, you know, it's not super detailed, but I can tell you there is a large following of the show that are sitting there with notepads and writing things down and freeze framing and seeing, you know, if they can read labels and things. And they do learn a lot by watching, and I like that.
Go ahead, Teresa. I just had to interject my, you know, smart-ass comment because that's what I do.
I was just saying it's so how do you feel about that? You learn through trial and error, through experimentation. You kind of paid your dues, but you paid the ways. And now, like I said, I mean, people got it easy. Obviously, you still have to have the talent to be able to do this, but how do you feel about the opportunities that people have now? Do you think there are more opportunities for these up-and-comers, or do you think that because you're kind of a pioneer in this business, that you're still always going to have the upper hand when it comes to getting the best quality of product out at the end?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point. Yes, it's a wonderful time to do it because you have access to a lot of amazing new materials and information galore. The flip side of that is that means there's thousands of other people that also have this access and want to be in the biz. So it's more competitive, and I can tell you that if I was to start today, it would be a lot tougher. Now, it was tougher in different ways back then, but it would be tough because there's so much competition and so many people willing to just do it for next to nothing in their garage. So it's tough that way.
Teresa?
Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, okay. Hey, that brings up, since we're kind of going chronologically somewhat, the tale, I'm really interested in hearing a little bit more, because I don't know, I don't think we got into it that much last time. I'm really interested in hearing about this golden era when you were creating these masks, and obviously this is a period that people, you know, really revere, and it seems to have been a time of special creativity and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So was that the 80s when that was going on? And I mean, did you know at the time that you were really a, you know, kind of a Picasso of the horror mask?
You know, no, I didn't. I was just, you know, making stuff and putting it out there. And I didn't realize it was impacting people. But, you know, this golden era that Giordeau talks about, that's a Giordeau thing. Now, that just happened to be the point in time where his DNA and what I was making lined up perfectly. And so he was truly enthralled. I mean, he is not faking any of that on TV. In fact, if we have someone new show up, he likes to go to dinner with them and tell them the whole story and explain why Halloween masks are so important to the world. And it's funny because it's like he's got this new meat and he tells them. But from my perspective, and I think a lot of other people too, there was that era that Giordeau calls the golden era, which was the start of the company till about 1985. But we've had many eras of where we've reformed the company and have impacted different people in other ways, and they feel very strongly about later eras, like the 90s or when we got into animatronics. That was a whole big thing that changed us completely, changed the industry completely. There's been articles written about our electric chair that single product was, at the time the article was written, it was the number one thing that changed the haunted house industry, that single product. And so I think there's the golden era, the platinum era, the magnesium era. You know, we've just in the company over and over. It's just Jordu's favorite is the golden era when we started.
Got it. Well, that was explained very well, and now I understand that that is a Jordu thing. That is not necessarily how the world views, and I'm glad to hear you've had a succession of varying metal eras.
Yeah.
And it seems to be going strong right now.
We've had the opportunity to do amazing things the last 5 or 10 years that are the most exciting for me. I mean, not to put Halloween Mass down in any way, but when you can make a huge creature and bring it to life with movement and sound and smoke and lights, and that's the cat's meow as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. It's amazing stuff. And the other element is someone, and that would seem to be you, and we want to get Marsh involved here too. You know, someone's got to know at least some of how all these different disciplines work. I mean, it really is kind of amazing the variety of skills and knowledge that go into these things. You have the creative aspect. You have generally it starts with in the brain, but then someone draws it, then sculpts it, then makes a mold. See, I'm learning the process. And, you make the mold, and then you, depending on what the material is, go from there. But, you know, there's all the animatronic aspects of it. I know a lot of it is pneumatic, right? Is most of it air, it seems. But I know last season, I remember you were getting into, kind of this whole new world opened up with using the software, and Microsoft came on. I remember that, whole other layer. And now you're using the water-based cutter. I don't know what you call that, but cutting with water.
Oh, yeah, they call it Water Jet, I guess, and that thing's unbelievable what they can accomplish with that. And then there's the guys out in Nebraska that do the styrofoam cutting, that's in fact we plan on doing more with those guys if we go into season 4, because they could rule the world with size. I mean, they can piece things together that would just be monstrous.
And the value of that's the weight, right? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah,
Marsh.
That's wonderful. The styrofoam itself and the molds, very light. Yeah, Teresa.
Oh, no, I was just going to comment. My partner and I, Kathy, did an investigation at a printing company, and they had one of those water laser jet cutters.
Uh-huh.
It was monstrous. It was this huge machine, and they were explaining, how delicate it is and what it does, and I was just blown away. But what I was going to ask is, do you see the change in the industry and in the whole with the home haunters and the big business, the theatrical side, plus all these like haunted house, what would they call them, attractions? Do you think that the business has exploded as much as just the mask making, the creative end of it? Has the business end of it exploded in the same demand? Is it on par with the number of people that are actually creating these days?
Yeah, as haunted houses get better, the attendance continues to grow. And of course, you have that, well, then more people get into it and the pie gets thinner, but the pie keeps growing. And it really is kind of fun to watch, because I grew up where haunted houses were black plastic and masks from a local novelty store. They were usually charity driven, which is nice, but there was no funding, because there was nothing, there's nobody that was going to get a payday, so it's just kind of volunteers and things. Well, when that shifted and people started really putting money into these events, the attendance just has continued to grow. I really don't know what it is. I just know that that successful haunted houses are doing, you know, tens of thousands of people, and they're all over the country.
I have a friend of mine, and he's in the chat room right now, and he's a volunteer at the Ohio State Reformatory. I am also a volunteer there. We both work with them in the archives department. But they do a big haunted house attraction every year. From I don't know the name of the company.
Sorry. If you've seen the show, you know we live next to a train here.
He was wondering.
Drama in real
okay,
life.
We're good.
Do you make anything specifically for the haunted?
He stopped tooting his horn now. Sorry.
Okay. Do you recall
I hear that lonesome whistle blow.
For
yeah.
The haunted experience.
So you were saying, Teresa?
Sorry. Do you recall if you made anything for the haunted prison experience in Mansfield at the Ohio State Reformatory for their haunted house attraction? Someone in the chat room was asking.
Oh, you know, I don't. In fact, I get questions like, you know, how much does this cost, or, you know, do you have this in stock? Is that, and I'm like Klinger. I know nothing. I don't really think I want to know. I just focus on, you know, my job is to, you know, come up with this stuff and paint it and sculpt a lot of it, and so I don't really get into who we're selling to mostly, and I meet them at the show and things, but I just, in fact, Marsha will start talking about a client's name in a meeting, and it's like, I have no idea what she's talking about. I said, I just, give me product. I don't know what are you talking about. What are we making, you know, and so I don't know, but Marsha might. She stepped out, but she'll be right back, but we'll have to ask her.
Please let us know about when she returns, because we'd love to get her perspective on things as well, of course.
Oh yeah, she's just trying to get some stuff. We're trying to get a shipment out. We had a huge shipment that went out that just about killed us. Now we're trying to do some last minute UPS stuff.
It's real life action.
Yes.
I mean, it's not all glamour, is it?
No, you know, it really isn't glamorous. And one of the things I love about the TV show is I can tell when people walk in, and, you know, a lot of times we have people visit the studio. We had some, like, elderly people come from Lakewood, Colorado, or Littleton, Colorado today, and I could tell they hadn't seen the show because they walk in, they're just looking around and say, oh, this is kind of interesting, you know. The ones that have seen the show that come in and they've found us, it's like they've got stars in their eyes, you know. They've seen the show and they've actually bought the fantasy that, you know, we live exciting lives and it's just amazing. And it's really, we're just making monsters like other people make cabinets, you know. It's just, that's just our thing. It is interesting to a point, but the show makes it really amazing looking.
Well, I love the animated aspect. That really gives it another layer, and it kind of fills in. And it does give the illusion that, you know, it's heightened reality, I suppose. The animated aspect, and that was a brilliant move. You're slightly, I think, downplaying it though, because, you know, ultimately the core of all this is how creative you are, and how creative the team is, and how good people are at what they do, and then the process is interesting too. You know, the creative part is amazing and is the foundation of it. But I think lots of people, I'm sure, are really interested in seeing at least some of the nuts and bolts of how it all comes together. And it's very complicated, and there's a lot to it. I wanted to ask you, it appears on the show that you yourself, or you and Marsha, or other members of your team, you and others, go and do all or most, at least of these major installs. Is that true? You have to go and put that together?
Now, that is something that was more of a rarity prior to the show, and that is one thing that has been done in order to make it work for Travel Channel. And it was really a brilliant move. And now we did do it sometimes. We would help on installations, but Travel wanted to make sure we traveled. And so that's been wonderful because we've been able to go and see so many of our clients and see their haunts and get to help them set it up. And that is, I don't know if you'd call it staged or it's more a luxury of the funding is there to make that happen for both us and our clients. And it adds an element that is great because then the audience gets to see not only how the thing is made, but how it's used and how people respond.
Oh, I think that's an important part of the show. You know, I love to see how it's actually implemented, and it's always interesting to see that there's almost always some kind of problem, you know, and I think that's real life. Things
well,
just
it
don't
is real
always...
life because prototypes are plagued with problems. And these are all prototypes because people call us up, hey, can you make this? And so it's almost guaranteed to have some issue that you have to work through.
And it's really cool to see the ingenuity. I love the Israel episode where, I mean, you just basically had to start all over again with the support or the brace. And then it sounded like the measurements were different because it was metric, so with the metal. So you had to start over again with that. But here you are in this exotic, interesting place that you hadn't been before, at least in the work context. So yeah, I hadn't thought about that in terms of the Travel Channel, literally angle that they would want you to travel, and.
Yeah.
In a sense, I'm glad they do because some of these channels don't seem to be particularly concerned anymore.
Care. Yeah, they did. It's like History Channel's doing stuff on aliens. It's like, well, now let's see.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah, and I think it was wonderful because they had been doing, they were actually educated to our industry probably better than any other network because they've been doing these haunts from around the country and then our show came along and it was like, wow, we could not just show the haunt, we could actually show from, when it starts as a liquid and basically dirt and take it through the process and then go to the haunt. And so it was a brilliant move on their part. And I think, they realized because of their experience previously with other shows on haunted houses that it's an interesting biz.
Just to get people caught up in case there's people who haven't seen the show, and by golly, I really, really recommend it. I find it just fascinating. Like I said, I just sat down and rewatched about 4 episodes in a row, which is a fair amount of time
to dedicate, even
when you can boil down the commercials, it still takes time, but we gotta let people know for sure this is your show's on. And it's interesting too how you run the back-to-back episodes. It's Sunday nights on the Travel Channel at 8 and then 9, 2 separate new episodes, Eastern and Pacific. And just to get people caught up on this season, what are some of your favorite elements that have been shown thus far? What's your perspective on the episodes that have run so far this year? Just maybe highlights and just anything that comes to mind.
Well, I have enjoyed every single show. In fact, the show that I was the least enthusiastic about, which was the very first show, and it was the whole show on the Houston trade show and us making the products and getting ready for the show. And, they film so much, and this is another one of the secrets of the show is they have so much footage that they end up catching real magic moments that are just funny, you know, and then they're really clever about piecing it together. So I like them all. I would say that the Adobe one was very interesting because that was out of our element. You know, these are not monster people, but Russell Brown is a monster person, and he was such a character, and the product idea they came up with was so amazing that I love that. The Kiss one was fun because, you know, it was Kiss, and that's kind of crazy. They're like monsters and rock, and the wedding thing was funny, and which that was really, that was another elaborate thing to rig to keep Marcia from finding out, and at one point. She actually, my job was to keep her out of that room while they set up for the shot. And so we were looking at stuff, and she just walked in. There was nothing I could do because if I said, don't go in there, you know, the gig is up. So she walks in, and there's all these people sitting around, and Lisa's like, oh, we're just setting up a scene or something. And Marcia still didn't catch on. So, yeah, it's fun to watch it. In fact, I've been enjoying it because the year has been so intense and so fast-paced. I'm kind of curious to see what I did this year. I've forgotten more than I remember, and so it's great that it's cataloged on these shows.
That is funny. You know, that reminds me, we have a lot of, usually it's more from the investigative type shows, but we have a lot of reality show based people here running the gamut from, all, of course, all the ghost hunting shows, but even, going all the way over to horror on the one end, we have oddities, so people are, you know, running a shop. But you hear a lot of the same kind of structural things, and I've heard a lot of people say, it is so fun to watch the shows because we don't really know how it's going to come out, even though it's real life, because you don't know how it's going to be put together. You don't know what's, what bits will be chosen. I mean, you know, the arc, of reality, I suppose, you know how things come out, but you know, the tone and the mood and what is emphasized over other things. And it's always interesting to hear that because, in other words, even in reality shows, the reality, of course, is shaped. And it's so it's interesting that unless the talent, quote unquote, is also directly involved in the editing process or in the production process and putting it together, and it's, I guess in some cases they are, and in others they aren't, then it's just, in a sense, it's just as new for them to see the finished product. And then the other part of it is when you're dealing with people who are in different locations or doing different things and then have all of that put together, I mean, they really may not know what happened, say, you know. Meanwhile, while I was doing this, so-and-so was off doing that. So they really don't know. Or, as you were saying, they may have just forgotten. Wow, I've been so busy, it's so crazy, we're going so nonstop. I forgot I did that. So I suppose it's the philosophical aspect of, you know, art imitating life. art imitating life, imitating art, maybe, that is an additional element to all this. Teresa, what say you?
This is what I say. When do you break? When is your season over? Do you have a big collective sigh of relief in the shop after Halloween, like the Haunted Housewives kind of do? Actually, we don't because we go through November, but... is there a mad rush for Halloween and then does it slow down, or is this an all year thing? Are you just constantly working all year?
It is It's kind of both. It is all year. We work all year and have deadlines all year long. But I will have to say that when October 31st hits, we do breathe a sigh of relief. And November and December, we still have lots to do, but it's different. It's not quite, because when it's September and October, people are very tense and they need their product. And if there's problems, it's not like, oh, I thought I'd call and see what, you know, how to fix this. It's like they're just like, you know, I open in 2 hours, you know. And so the tempo is much higher. And then there's kind of this release, which is wonderful because it's right around Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's. And then, you know, then we ramp it back up. So it never stops all year long. It's just much more intense after the first of the year.
And what do you do on Halloween? Do you celebrate Halloween? Do you go to any of these attractions? Do you decorate your home? Are you still doing home haunts? Or do you just kind of leave it all at work?
We're so awful. No, we don't do anything. There is no, if you went to our home, you would never know what we do for a living. And I think we do that on purpose because we get to live with our monsters all day long, but we're through with them by the time we get home. And as far as what we do on Halloween, almost nothing. We're like Santa Claus. We're done. You know, it's the 26th of December. We're done. We're not interested in, putting on facial appliances and running around town. we're shot. And so the most we usually will do is we'll go over to the grandkids, and if we have even the slightest bit of energy, we'll put on a silly wig or something, but nothing elaborate. The last time I can even remember getting dressed up, Marcia, and this was many years ago. Marcia, I went as Santa Claus. This was Halloween. I went as Santa Claus, and she went as the Easter Bunny. We thought that would be kind of funny, and we actually won at a local bar. We won their top prize of costumes. But anyway, yeah, we don't do much. I'm ashamed of us, but that's the way it is.
No, I think you have an excuse.
Oh, that's funny.
Brings me to a point, something that you said on one of the shows, and I stood up and applauded when you said this on TV, and my daughter was on the computer. She's like, what are you doing? You crazy lady? You were talking about Halloween and costumes, and you said something about, I wish I would have wrote it down because it was a beautiful quote, about sexy Halloween. About how the costumes these days have changed. And instead of being scary costumes that people are doing, they've moved to this, let's make it sexy, and everything is a sexy Halloween costume.
Yeah.
And that drives me crazy. I'm trying to get my kids to do something scary. They
right.
want to do something different, and obviously they're not doing sexy. They're little. But
yeah.
It's time to be scary. You're supposed to be scary and gruesome and gross and creative, and they're like, I want to be a pilot. I want to be a scientist. I'm like, no, you got to be like a dead pilot. Be scientist.
Oh, I'm so glad there's mothers like you out there. I actually got a lot of support for that on Facebook and things, people agreeing. And I don't know why people want to go out and be beautiful on Halloween. I mean, it's like the dead live. What are you talking about? And in fact, Marsh and I went to, we had set up these giant gargoyles on Hugh Hefner's mansion, the Playboy mansion. And so we went out there for the big party. They do this crazy, you know, costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, these crazy parties. And everybody was beautiful. They were sexy, they were beautiful, they were superheroes, and so we went as zombies, us and another couple, and so we were called, what was it, Marcia, the ugly people or the scary people?
Yeah, I think it was the scary people.
Yeah, the scary people, because everybody was beautiful and everybody was studs, and so, you know, in my opinion, we were the only good costumes there, but that was my opinion. But anyway, so yeah, it's a direction I don't personally like, and it's been going on for about 10 years, I think.
Oh, I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I will never do that.
Go ahead.
Will be gross and scary as possible, and it drives me nuts. It's like, you can dress like a slut when you go to a bar. You don't need to do it for Halloween. Come on, man. Put some fake blood on that.
That's right.
It's the slutification of Halloween.
Yep. It made me very happy to hear you.
I think the reality of it is we've seen Halloween has become sort of the bookend of Christmas. And those are your two kind of all-consuming holidays. They're kind of opposite of each other. They're thematically opposite, of course, but there's also a lot of similarities. And so what each of those has done is they get so big that they develop this kind of critical mass. And Halloween probably didn't have that critical mass that Christmas has now had for quite a while until relatively recently. And what it has been doing is sucking in all of these traditions. And I think what's happened with Halloween as far as costumes go is you used to have a distinction between a Halloween costume and any other kind of costume, a masquerade ball, a whatever, a costume party, that kind of thing wasn't exactly the same thing as a Halloween costume. And I think what's happened is now all of that has been absorbed into it. And for a lot of people, the underlying appeal of a costume is not the transformative aspect of it, not the ability to be something you're not, but to kind of highlight whatever you think your best aspects are. So it's you're creating kind of a superhero version of yourself. And I think that is kind of what's underlying the whole slutification. And that's a real word. I mean, I'm hearing that everywhere. And welcome back, Marcia. We missed you.
Hi. Yes. I'm sorry. I'm back.
Was your task accomplished?
Yes, it was.
Excellent. So this is like part of the show. We are living the life.
That's right.
Right now.
That's
in
right.
real life.
I tried to convince the truck driver that I had told him it would be a 10 or 20 minute wait, and it turned into almost 2 hours, and I tried to convince him that he was like part of the show. He was getting to see it live. I don't think he bought it, though.
Well, it was a good try, because it might have worked.
Yeah, I'd try anything, yeah.
It might have worked. Marcia, why don't you just give us just a little background on what is your involvement with the business? Obviously, you are intimately involved, and you're right there most of the time on the show, and you're making decisions and doing that. What do you see, what is the essence of your role with the company and of course, the show as well?
Well, that's a good question.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ed and I do a lot of the same things all the time, except I would say that on a day-to-day basis, he's usually painting, and I'm usually sitting at the desk, usually, on a day-to-day basis. But those roles are interchangeable also. I mean, I do production too, and he certainly does, stuff he has to do at the desk, but that's kind of it. We both manage production, and we both are involved in design and new product development and stuff like that.
Yeah, intimately. So it's not like, I can just go off and make something. We have to kind of talk about everything and try to come up with our best shot at new products.
That's one of the exciting and interesting and underlying elements of the show is we get to see a business that has two people who do all these different elements. You're reminded or you're shown that a small business, it's all relatively small business,
Right.
It really is holistic. I mean, you guys have to know and be able to do all these different things. And
yeah.
And that's, you know, you got to be a pretty big company these days, you know, to really start specializing in terms of the people who own and run the company. I mean, you really do have to know all those elements and kind of have, you know, kind of keep that going in your mind, so no matter how much you're concentrating on sculpting or painting or sitting at the desk, you know, dealing with some finance issues or whatever, you still have to keep all these other things in mind. I think it shows you really have to love what you do, because it's not easy. It's hard, and there's a lot of various elements to
it. It's not easy making monsters.
That's our line. That's great.
But, you know, back in the day, I mean, we've been in business 35 years, so, you know, back in the day, it was kind of us, and we'd have, you know, like a couple of people or whatnot, but, you know, so we had to kind of do it all.
Yeah, and in fact, when the company got too big, and there was an era where we had 75 employees, and we had a conveyor system, and we were making masks at incredible volumes. That I didn't enjoy, because I ended up not making monsters very much. It was mostly, you know, dealing with employees and you know, making sure they were doing what they were supposed to do, and you know, soothing ruffled feathers and fights, and I, you know. And it's much nicer now. The size of the company is just big enough. We can pretty much rule the world without all the hassles.
That's very interesting that you consciously scaled back. Because, yeah, sure, if you're following the logic of business, you're going to specialize. You're going to figure out what you do best, what's the demand for, and then just make as much of it as you possibly can. So the fact that you made a conscious decision to kind of veer from that is very interesting, and I'm sure at the time was not an easy decision to make.
Well, some of it was made for us. The industry, a lot of the changes we were talking about where we shifted what the company did were forced on us by the world changing. For instance, when you used to buy Halloween masks, they were in a bin at Kmart, and they were horrible, and they were, you know, they were all made in overseas somewhere, and but then China started, you know, about 20 years ago or so, started making pretty good masks, and they got better and better, and now they're making beautiful stuff that we can't compete with toe-to-toe because, you know, the labor differences alone, and so we were losing about 5% of our sales every year, and so we had to do something, and we were kind of forced out of just doing masks and props into other things.
Interesting. Well,
yeah, it's kind of like you know, it's an effects kind of studio, only we do things in masks, and so all of our crew is very talented as far as, you know, I mean, they can do pretty much everything too. Not exact. I mean, not everybody here sculpts, for instance, or you know, paints.
We ought to do that. We ought to make Mike sculpt. I'll weld.
Huh, right.
We'd be out of business in a week and a half. But yeah, you know, I know most of it. Welding's about the only thing that I don't really do well or know well. But yeah, Marcia's right. Everybody kind of can do most things.
With a mere 7 minutes to go, and what a quick hour, kind of amazing. It's always really fun. I wanted to ask, because we got into a very interesting conversation last time around about it. I asked you guys if you had had any actual paranormal experiences yourself, and Marcia said yes, in fact, recently. And Ed, you were caught off guard. So what has gone on in the subsequent year? Any more paranormal experiences in either of your lives?
No, not for me.
No, I think I haven't had any physical experience that I have actually continued studying. In fact, one of the guys we met on the show, he's on a webisode. It's my favorite webisode where he had a bunch of our mass, and he is like just a regular guy that is a ghost hunter kind of guy, and he didn't buy it. His wife drug him into it, and now he's totally convinced and gave me a DVD I have yet to watch, but so I've kind of been studying it, and it's there's the science part of it, the quantum physics and the the additional dimensions part of it, and there's the spooky part of it that I'm not too interested in real scary things. I just like the fake scary things, so I haven't really looked any of that up, but so mine's been more just research and watching DVDs and things, nothing. We're still just in the four dimensions here at Distortions.
We're just making latex and foam props here.
Remarkably well. Well, what conclusions, even just for yourself, what have you arrived at after doing this study? What are your thoughts on the paranormal world in general?
Well, now, I don't know if that, when you say paranormal, if that includes flying saucers and these sorts of things.
Sure.
I've become fairly convinced that there is something going on. I as far as saucers and things people are seeing, I'm a little frustrated that we don't have good pictures. But on the other hand, I've seen, like Gordon, one of the astronauts, talking about filming a flying saucer. They had 16-millimeter film, and they filmed this thing land and take off, and so that's a fairly credible person that doesn't need publicity, and so I've become convinced that there's something there, but I haven't been on a ship yet.
Yeah, that's a whole other. I think Teresa and I have fairly similar perspectives, where she even more than I are convinced just from experience and just from bulk of evidence that, for lack of a better word, the ghost world, the spirit world, is real.
Oh yeah.
In the broadest sense. I mean, there's something going on there. I'm really right on the fence about both Bigfoot being kind of the current favorite of the cryptozoological world. You know, Bigfoot, I'm about literally right on the fence. It would not shock me if they really did finally find one, and it would not shock me if they never find one. You know, it's really odd, because there's very, very strong reasons to feel either way. And I'm fairly similar about UFOs, where there's so many reports. You know, there's just such a huge volume. When you're analyzing this from a quasi-scientific but open-minded perspective, you'll hear various percentages. All right, well, you can just throw out, say, 95%, or maybe it's even, 99%. But that still leaves a significant number, a percentage, of evidence or experiences that can't be explained any other way. My problem with UFOs is it would just have to be such an utterly alien, no pun intended, technology for them to get here, just because space is so vast.
Well, this is where I have a problem with the aliens from outer space thing, because of there are some technical difficulties just traveling through space in any kind of conventional way. I mean, if you hit a speck of dust traveling at speeds near the speed of light, it would go off like an atomic bomb in the ship. So. Traveling at high speed is something that is very unlikely. So
exactly.
So there's
But definitely the spirit world. I mean, definitely, you know, we don't believe it's just a physical existence here.
No, I think quantum physics has kind of put the nail in that coffin.
I agree. I agree, and I think even more recent, the all of the developments in quantum entanglement, where they're finding, I think that may have something to do with ESP, you know, in the broadest sense, in terms of how do we pick up on this energy from other sources outside of ourselves, and I think there is some way that that it works, that the entanglement works on something other than that tiny micro level. I think it must work somehow that we just don't understand yet on a larger scale level. And I think that would, you know, from a purely kind of mechanistic scientific viewpoint, that could explain how we could know what was going on in someone else's mind, and lots of other things. We had a guest on, Teresa, who was it that you brought on? He's an author. He had spent a lot of time in Asia. And do you remember who I'm talking about? He had investigated in Asia.
John.
And
John Kisiba?
Yeah. Right, yes, yeah, exactly. Right. Or was it him? Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. What matters is the perspective I heard, I had never heard before, and really fascinated me, that even our interaction with the spirit world, you know, with ghosts, whatever term you want to use, that even that is actually a form of ESP, because the spirits, or these entities, they don't have any physical mechanism whereby they could actually talk to us. You know, how could they create sound waves when they don't have a physical body, and so on and so forth? So that our interaction with them is also a form of ESP. And that really kind of opened up or gave me a different direction to think in on how all that works. Now you don't have to account for the physicality of these various phenomena, because it is some sort of, you know, brain-to-brain, for lack of a better term, interaction, rather than a physical, our physical world interaction as we now think of it. So, you know, that could be another element of this, that that once we really truly understand the brain, the mind, I should say, and how the energy of that works and how it interacts, then, you know, maybe that will really help us understand how the paranormal or spirit world works, or how we interact with that as well. Well, we have gone past the time.
Oh, great talking to you guys.
Yeah, it was starting to get really interesting. We'll have to do this again soon.
Yes, absolutely. It's you guys are so much fun, and I really do love the show. And I think I guess there's always a question, but I hope there's no real question about getting renewed, because your show really is different in that, like I say, I'm sincere when I say the flow and the organic nature of what you're seeing really does kind of supersede the artificiality, if that makes sense. I mean, we know aspects are artificial. It's a freaking TV show.
There's cameras. There's some things, but it's pretty darn real. It's as close as I think you can come and film that high quality.
And it's fun. And you guys are very easy to watch. You know, no one's perfect. You all have your quirks, And that's part of it too. But the human interaction seems very real, very unforced, very unstaged, and the processes are so fascinating. And then the subject matter is so interesting. You know, it's so fun to see these crazy things being made and the ideas, you know, where they come from and pushing the envelope in one way or another. I really think it's a great show, and I hope that it just keeps going forever. So let's remind people, Travel Channel, and it is Sundays at 8 and 9, new shows at both hours. And how much longer in this season do we have?
There's
two more Sundays.
And then, you know, then Halloween's over. But yeah, I think they'll show some of the they'll fill in on Saturdays with other shows from last year and things, too.
Yeah, yeah. I've, every season has been great. And, some shows kind of, maybe the first year they have a certain energy and then they're kind of done. But not with your show. I mean, I can just see it going on forever because the creativity goes on forever. And you're making new things and you're doing new things and there's new processes. It may be new from the physical creation standpoint, from the technology standpoint. It's always new, of course, from the creative standpoint. And there's no new people involved, even though your core is obviously, you know, very secure and sound. But others come and go, and you're interacting with the various people at the various haunts and all that. So, anyway, super pleasure to talk to you once again. Wish you nothing but the best. And, we'd love to have you on again.
Much.
Maybe next time we'll really, really focus on all this cool theoretical stuff. And
Well, it's a fascinating subject in and of itself. You know, I mean, we make the rubber monsters, but I think there's some amazing stuff going on in the spiritual realm that I don't know. It seems to be heating up too. I don't know, but
it does. And then think of this: how about this weird hybrid, like what Teresa was talking about down at the Ohio State Reformatory? Now you're talking about places, often they're shuttered institutions, that kind of thing, that are really haunted, genuinely haunted, but then also have haunted attractions. So how weird is that? How many layers is that going on?
Yeah, that's getting out there. I mean, so it sets you up psychologically. Obviously there's the fake stuff, but there's like, yeah, but there's some real creepy stuff going on here. So I think that sets people up to be in the mood to be scared.
And it leaves that question in their minds. Was that real or was that... You know,
yeah.
was that just part of the show, or was, oh my God, was that really real?
No, that's right. That's part of it.
So that's the next thing you guys need to incorporate. See, so you start telling all these haunted attractions, not only will we make the coolest, freakiest, creepiest props, animatronics, etc., we'll bring in real ghosts.
That's right. We'll hire professional demons and spooks to go out with every product. I don't know. Maybe Beetlejuice is available. I don't know.
And then you charge them double to take them out when they can't stand it anymore. Like Ghostbusters.
Right.
All right. Well, Teresa, what are your final thoughts?
Good night, guys. It's been great talking to you. I'm glad I finally got to talk to you. Have a great Halloween.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful talking to you.
And it's been a real pleasure. Marcia, we'll have to talk to you more next time. But thanks so much for your...
In fact, she ran out to do a UPS run. So you're back to just me again. Sorry.
He's the glue that holds it all together, let's face it. She runs the show,
you
know that.
I got to tell you this one thing. We were doing a showing of the show, and there's a point where Jordu kind of asked me and says, well, here you have this company, but in the end, it's all run by a woman. And I, at that, the women in the audience who always end up, I think a lot of times in the haunt business, kind of like behind the scenes making things happen and don't always get the credit because the dude is up front, you know, in front of the camera, they just applauded and roared when he said that. And I realized that, yeah, you know, there's the, a lot of times people, the credit isn't equally distributed as it should be.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate her, and we know what's going on. Us women, we know. We know who runs the show. So
that's right.
Well, thank you so much, guys. Have a great night.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Happy Halloween, and we'll be watching on Sunday.
Same to you guys.
Okay. Bye, Ed. Great talking
All
to
right.
you.
All right. Bye-bye. Have fun.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, of course. We've really been on a –